I would like to begin this episode by thanking some people. People like Womble the Greyhound, Zen Bender, and Daniel Morton. All of these are folks who have gone to patreon.com/chuckvtv and supported this show and the network. You can be like them and get a bunch of cool stuff if you want to by going to patreon.com/chuckvtv. Thanks.
Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Sayonara Wild Hearts, which is a rhythm action game developed by Simogo and published by Annapurna Interactive for PC, consoles, and mobile in 2019.
Yeah. Will this be the shortest WAF?
Maybe.
Possibly. That's okay.
Because
mm-hmm. This is... I was really, we haven't talked about this outside of a show. This unlocked something for me.
Okay.
As a game. So we both are fans of Atari 50.
Yes.
That product. This also to me feels like a new thing.
Yes.
And we'll get into that, but I want more new things in games.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a short episode because this is a record.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a game. It's a game.
Yeah.
It's positioned as an album. Seeing them talk about it as them trying to make an album that is a game, unlocked the whole thing for me.
Oh yeah.
And we'll get into it. This ended up being something I really, really like looking at it through those terms.
Yes. I love this. I love it for exactly what it is.
Yes.
You can want something different. You can want something more. You could want this to be deeper. That is fine. Or you can want something deeper. This being exactly what it is perfect. Yeah. Like this to a certain degree, like this is video games to me.
Yes. It's video games, but it's also, again, it feels like a new thing to me.
Yes.
Or at least to me. Yeah. This is a good, other than GTA 5, a good month for restraint.
Mm-hmm.
Because the order is also just like, we're a narrative shooter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a narrative shooter. We're telling a narrative. The narrative is pretty good. It's over in the amount of time that one season of a TV show would be over. The end.
Yes.
This is an album. It's an album. It's over in the time of an album. That's the end.
Yeah.
It also continues our 2-game streak of Sapphic Love.
Yep.
Which will be broken next week. So enjoy it while you can.
Unfortunately, that was not intentional, but
nope.
I always love when we end up having those inadvertent pairings. It happens all the time.
Yeah. This is great.
Yeah.
You play as a young woman, the Fool, who is sent on this journey, this very metaphorical and abstract journey to restore balance to the realm of Arcana and mend her own broken heart in the process.
Yes.
Yeah. This is a metaphorical exploration of a healing from a breakup of sorts.
Yeah.
And as we mentioned, Simogo calls this an interactive pop album.
Right.
That is the best way to look at this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's good. Like it's a good album.
Yeah.
there is very little, I think, to dislike here. Each level is set to a music track. Many of them instrumentals, but like the climactic ones are vocal tracks. And the primary thing is this is an endless runner. You are chasing after someone in order to do battle with them, and you are collecting hearts along the way and avoiding hazards, all roughly to the beat.
Yes. While they are continuously introducing new wrinkles.
Yes.
you know, so you control the Fool, you're steering this motorcycle, dodging things, and collecting little power-ups that determines mm-hmm. your score.
Yes.
That is what we're going to talk about, those new little wrinkles that mm-hmm. are introduced in each level, because there's not a whole lot to the levels other than mm-hmm. that. You know, I talk about this being a short episode, that's what I mean.
Yes.
The control scheme stays the same. It is very, very direct and intuitive.
Right.
You move around, you have one action button. That action button mm-hmm. is contextual. It can do different things, but this game doesn't tutorialize and doesn't need to. It has like very elegant simplicity to it.
Yeah, it is very apparent what you're going to do. And I think that the way that they string things out and then later recombine them is done very cannily in a way that shows a very good idea for like play progression and design.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what you end up with, and one of the reasons why I call this like video games to me, is that this is a bunch of ideas, a bunch of disparate ideas that are coherently put together in this, making up like a sampler platter of not only the team's influences, but of like a bunch of classic arcade kind of stuff.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
You have Takeout, you have Hang On. There's parts of this, I feel like Rez, there's Star Fox, Elite Beat Agents, the variety, they say WarioWare for like mm-hmm. how they shake things up. You end up with like stuff that feels like Tempest or the Sonic 2 bonus levels, you know? Yeah.
And it's kind of, since it's kind of a rhythm game, the game rewards you with points for how well you do at the end, and you get a medal in mm-hmm. this. That is a way that, and this is best here for than generalities, because there are specific points where this shows up, but it's hard to remember them. Mm-hmm. This is one of the ways that looking at this as a pop album helped me unlock it, and I think is useful if you're going to play this.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you should not strive for mastery in this.
Yeah.
But the game does prioritize style over substance in several places, mm-hmm. where the camera is designed to look cool.
Yes.
And not necessarily set you up for success in mm-hmm. terms of collecting all the doodads.
It is difficult sometimes to tell distance or to tell relative position to a line that you are ostensibly expected to follow.
This coupled with the fact that this is, you know, it has that scoring system, but it's a very easy game. Mm-hmm. When you die, you just get set back a little bit. Mm-hmm. You cannot score out. It's not like Rock Band. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't not get enough little doodads to fail the level.
Right.
The coins you collect are there to show you where to go. They're mm-hmm. not there necessarily for score. Tells me that if at the end of the level, Queen Latifah is telling you bronze rank, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because you heard a song, you're listening to an album.
Mm-hmm.
If I were trying to play this for mastery, the reason why I'm doing all this prelude is because I want to set this up. There are people who play rhythm games and they do it specifically for mastery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've known people before who like play Elite Beat Agents with the sound off. You know, they're playing it for the score, you know, for the tapping mm-hmm. game. This game is bad for that.
Yeah.
If you just describe this as a rhythm game, you are not selling the holistic package of it.
Right.
And as a rhythm game, it has problems, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's more what I mean. Like it can be frustrating mm-hmm. that lack of tutorialization. There are times where you will miss a doodad. And the mm-hmm. only way to get that doodad, if you want to get that doodad for your score, is to restart the level.
Yeah.
That sucks. Like mm-hmm. that's not good. You can drill these over and over until you're perfect at them. That is available if you want to do it. I think the game is encouraging you not to do that and drink this in like you're putting on a CD.
Yeah, it wants you to just kind of experience in sequence to kind of go on the journey with it. So much so that like your reward for beating this is to play it straight through without any interruption.
Yeah,
right.
Like an hour.
This is a game that wants you to succeed.
Which we'll talk about. Yeah. But yeah, the game wants you to succeed so much so that if you die too frequently, the game will ask if you want to skip that section, mm-hmm. creating our second little duad with Grand Theft Auto V.
Yeah.
So we're exiting the sapphic love period and entering the would you like to skip this section
uh-huh.
period of autumn like, as a soft transition.
Yeah. I think this is like, yes, it's a bad rhythm game. This feels more like an action game that is about music. Or a musical action game where like the joy, you know, the joy in this is not going for score. It is finding that flow state following through in the action and trying to keep it going so that you can, perform along with the music. This forms a kind of nice comparison alongside Tetris Effect for me.
Yeah.
Actually, this is very similar to that as an experience.
The very best rhythm games make you feel like at certain points, like you are composing the music by play.
Yeah.
And this does engage with that from time to time. What I'm getting at is it doesn't engage with it consistently, and mm-hmm. that's A-okay because this is a poster child for more than the sum of its parts.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a very abstract story that's mm-hmm. happening here, but it has a very, very sweet and romantic tone.
Yeah, I love this. This whole thing gave me chills. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. You know, it has this this romanticism mm-hmm. that I think yeah. is really good. And the visuals are stylized in this way that is really cool looking. The cheap way to say it is everything looks a little bit like Andross. That's not the case, you know, because it's higher fidelity than that, but things are mm-hmm. like weird polygons.
Yeah.
You know, shaped, but everything is in this beautiful, bold neon.
Yes.
You know, that is very readable. Mm-hmm. And at a glance, and also just a powerful aesthetic. I'm pretty sure this is what the kids call bisexual lighting.
That is a term that I saw thrown out around this. Yeah.
Yep. Which, as somebody who likes that lighting, I wish that I could have that lighting as well.
Yeah, I know.
You're just describing something like a color to a you know, to a sexual identity feels bad to me, but what do I know? I'm 43.
I don't know. It's cool. Can I like this even if I'm straightish?
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know. We'll ask the council. The whole petition. We'll go to the top of the mountain and ask the leader of Quickie Mart.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a very charismatic game. I think is the overall side of this. Related to that, you know, the bisexual lighting, like, yeah, we're kind of joking about that aesthetic or whatever. This also is incredibly beloved in queer circles.
It's a sapphic love story.
Sapphic love story. There's also a reading on this that makes it very resonant for trans people, being about overcoming obstacles and kind of repression. The magical girl kind of angle of this, and just the self-actualization and transformation that is brought in here, I have seen cited as being especially resonant. So that's real cool. Yeah.
Yeah. In favor of it, even if it's not something that we can specifically comment on.
Yes.
You know, the music of this is electronic pop music, mm-hmm. you know, and this is something where it matches the levels perfectly. That is not a type of music that I tend to listen to a whole lot.
Right. You know,
it feels a little bit like listening to a Chvrches album. Yeah.
You know? And that's cited as an inspiration too. They were listening to Chvrches when they
Chvrches isn't my favorite band. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm never gonna not pronounce the V. It's the Vavitch. Like I'm not gonna not. It's a V. Chvrches. I don't. You know, I'm okay with Chvrches. Mm-hmm. It works for this though.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing where if this were just a record someone put on, I would think it was a well-made record, but it wouldn't be something mm-hmm. to listen to. Yeah. Adding all of these gestalt elements to it made me like the music better and became like a force multiplier for everything. So like the music made the visuals and story better and come across, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I'm very much in the same, and you're like making the comparison. Any of that guy's games, the person whose name I can't recall, Luminous, mm-hmm. Tetris Effect, Rez, Child of Eden, like none, like, you know, I've put those soundtracks on occasion, but like those visuals and those mechanics and the music, they're made to be experienced together for me, right? You know, I can be like over the moon in love with this music in this context while being like, no, I'll be fine with my mid-2000s Canadian indie pop.
I'm not gonna put it on. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a thing too, like I'm somebody who is a snob about rhythm games, in that specifically I have to like the music to like the rhythm game. Mm-hmm. I like this in terms of like pass fail. It's not something I'm gonna put on all the time, but I'm in favor of it existing. It seems mm-hmm. like good stuff. Compare with Elite Beat Agents, you know, wedding aunt music, which I don't think is very good. Yeah. If you still like YMCA and are just mm-hmm. like, yeah, man, YMCA kick ass, more power to you. I can't, you know, at this point. The soundtrack is scored by Daniel Olsen and Jonathan Eng. Swedish singer Linnea Olsen mm-hmm. provides the vocals, spelled differently, so probably not related to Daniel.
Yes.
And Smogo is a familiar name.
Yeah.
They're an iOS developer, one of the early real big hit iOS developers.
Yeah, they did Beat Sneak, something like that. Yep. The Rhythm Stealth game. Yep. That is pretty good. They did a couple of very slight games before. I had no idea that these were the same people. My jaw
hit
the floor.
It's real bizarre.
It is. When I saw that this
forever,
is the
too. This had a long development cycle. So like it makes sense for them to transform a lot because these are the Yearwalk.
people. Yeah. Year Walk, yeah. Device 6, and Sailor's Dream. All of those are very good for different ways, but they are narrative. Like they're very like cinematic is the wrong word, but like they're narrative, literary, like mixed media kind of things.
Yes. And they wanted to make a game that had was a little bit more than gut than brain, creating our Autumn of narrative heavy developers focusing on mechanics.
Yes.
The theming in this Autumn is fucking out of control. There are connections everywhere.
Yep. We do not do it intentionally, but nope. As part, it is impossible not to see the games that we do in proximity in relation to each other. So we're going to find those connections.
And it's a thing where, you know, feel about it how you will. The thing I feel when a narrative developer starts doing mechanically more robust games is pride. I feel good for them. I'm glad they did it.
Yes.
So they decided to play around with this Endless Runner format. The early concept was more 50s inspired with kind of like a Teddy Girl aesthetic and surf music. That would have been slick too.
Yeah.
I would have enjoyed that. But they shifted to pop music because that's what they were listening to at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and that love and the actual like enthusiasm shows through.
A wonderful reason to do something and to make that kind of change. It's like, well, let's just lean into what we like. You know, just we like this. Let's make something like it.
Yeah. We've done a lot of that shit on the network, and it served us pretty well.
Yeah, you know? It's an ethos that resonates.
Yeah.
They wanted to make a game for people who don't normally play games, and I have no idea how successful that is. You know, I could see being real frustrated running into trees all the time. And this, I've not put this in front of a non-gamer relative or a friend. That was part of their remit, was to make this approachable at the very least. And that's why they looked to older arcade games for inspiration. And in that process, not only looking to those, but being very aggressive about paring back and setting their scope so that they could, can keep the pacing up and keep it engaging, which is a good example of restraint.
Yeah, this didn't need a crafting mechanic or some shit.
Yeah,
The narration of this is Queen fucking Latifah.
I heard it and I was like, is that fucking Queen Latifah?
It's fucking Queen Latifah.
And I looked at it, it's Queen Latifah.
We got Latifed. the team joked about having her and then found out she was available and hired her just a week before launch. I love that.
Yeah, so not part of the promotion at all. Just, well, if we're going to, we can have Queen Latifah in our game, let's do it, I guess.
Yeah. You know, who knows if that name means anything to the Youngs? You know, to the target audience of this game. I was just thinking about people for whom something is unlocked, just hearing Queen Latifah go, bronze rank. And there are probably people who are just like, oh, I've been waiting 30 years for that.
I've been waiting for Queen Latifah to evaluate me. UNITY, baby.
Rate my UNITY. Please, Queen Latifah. You can finally get that taken care of if that's been on your taskmask. For 3 decades, it's time.
Yeah.
This game was well received. People really liked it. It resonated a lot with specific communities, as we talked about. People did complain that it's more style than substance. That's absolutely fair. It's also about an hour.
Yeah.
I talk about this being the shortest thing. Like, if you go into games for themelets.
Yep.
This month is about the idea of dollar per hour ratio, because we have this in the order, and then we have GTA 5, which is infinity.
Yes.
You can get that now for like $25 and it is infinite hours.
Not just $25. You can get that on Game Pass. It effectively comes free.
Yeah. Free and comes with an online version that's infinite. And then what's in the game is also effectively infinite. This month is about commentaries on that.
Yes.
We've staked our line in the sand. We're not going to say anything new about that. I think, I don't give a shit about dollar per hour ratio. I'm here for the experience, and if I spend, it's an hour long, and I spend like about the amount of money I'd spend to rent a movie on this, which is what I did when I got it, that's great. I had a great experience for an hour.
There's something to be said for, like maximalism or minimalism. That's not the way to go. Appropriatism. This is appropriate. You can want something that's more, but what is here sets out and accomplishes exactly what it set out to do, is my opinion. And it can be what it is.
And I'd argue with this game specifically, adding more would take away from it.
Yes.
This at double the link would be worse.
Yes.
You know, and that's going to sound like me as a parody myself because I like short games. But at the same time, like, what would they do? Right. You know, I'm not saying like there's nothing else you could do with this concept, mm-hmm. but there's a reason why only the most tedious and obnoxious of albums are like 2 hours long.
Yeah.
You know, it's a record. Think yeah. of it as a record. It's about 50 minutes long.
And there's already such a variety of ideas and like iterations yeah. on display here. Like how many more things do you want them to pull out of the well? You know, right. Do you want them to repeat themselves? Cause that would be deleterious.
That would
I think,
fun, you know?
Yeah.
And then of course you have something like Super Mario Wonder coming out that is all new ideas and is yeah. long, you know, so it right, can be right. done, but I also,
but that's Nintendo. The rules don't apply
different
to
scale.
Them.
Yes, yeah. exactly. they took forever to make that.
Right.
So we'll get into it here. The opening is this storybook narration about a girl who was once very happy in a town very much like your own, but her heart broke so hard that it ripped through the universe.
Yes.
Kind of lending this romantic angle to this, you know, as a metaphorical journey for how intense and serious that can feel.
Yes. And our first stage is to Claire de Lune, or an arrangement mm-hmm. of it here. We get more storybook about this, you know, harmonious existence in this realm of Arcana that was watched over by these three major Arcana, the Empress, the Priestess, and the Hierophant. But then Death came along with their minions and then disrupted the balance. I kind of wish that this wasn't explained. I'm not really, like, as much as I'm here for Queen Latifah doing this stuff, that's fine. I think that the storybook stuff does fall a little bit flat for me. Just let the symbols be the symbols.
I think that. I'm a little bit over tarot cards as symbols.
Well, yeah.
As a thing. And the way they're being used here, I'm sure there are interpretations about why specifically the Empress, the Priestess, and the Hierophant, mm-hmm. and then Death coming along, you know, as opposed to, like, the Tower or something. But yeah. I, you know... The current upswing on tarot stuff has made me a little bit more annoyed by it. Mm-hmm. I would have liked this more with other kinds of symbols too.
Oh yeah.
I generally agree. The storybook stuff is so rare though. That doesn't bug me. You know, the three Arcana faded. They created a heroine from the shards of a broken heart, which is the Fool, hoping she could save their universe.
Yeah.
And the heart on the back of the card becomes a butterfly that flies into this woman's room, mm-hmm. And wakes her up.
Yes.
And immediately upon being woken up, the house flips and dumps her out.
Right.
Onto a skateboard, and mm-hmm. we're on our first stage.
Yeah, we are skateboarding along this dotted highway in space, Rainbow yes. Road, basically. And I love this, the way this first level is set up, because it looks like a rock band or a guitar hero
audio
board.
Surf.
Audio surf.
It's very specifically it's like lanes. Audio surf. It's three yeah. lanes. It's analog though, unlike audio mm-hmm. surf. You're not just shifting lanes.
Yeah,
So you can be in the lane but still miss the coins. Mm-hmm. They're little hearts. I keep calling them doodads because there's a couple different shapes of them.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, they're like high value and low value ones. But yeah, it is setting that up here. Even though it is not modal per each track, it is like establishing like, hey, if you're familiar with rhythm games, this is the language of rhythm games. Before they take yes. that away, I think that is done very well. We should talk about the appearance. On the mm-hmm. on the main character, a little bit more of a masculine presentation, you know, shorter hair, wearing baggy clothes, dumps
still
out.
Clearly, you know,
feminine,
female yeah. identifying feminine, but yeah. with more butch qualifiers.
Yes.
I say tiptoeing through a minefield and making sure I'm not saying anything bad. That right. is how it reads to me. I hope that's not trying to be bad. Mm-hmm. That's how it reads.
I only mention it because it is set up in contrast for later. No.
Yes. Yeah. At the end of this, you get through the level, you collect the coins, regardless of how many coins you get, you mm-hmm. get your score, and you catch this butterfly and turn to this masked superhero.
Yeah.
Starting this like domino mask. Classic mm-hmm. kind of superhero.
Yeah. Again, magical girl shit. Yeah.
Yes. And we start the next level, Heartbreak 1, mm-hmm. Where we are surfing on the back of the Devil tarot card.
Yeah.
Down this heart-shaped tunnel, like you're going through hyperspace. This is introducing, you know, we're not on a flat plane.
Mm-hmm.
We curve yeah. up the sides. We're still moving left and right to get the hearts, but there are no lane markers.
Yeah.
That's the gentle escalation.
Yeah. And we're setting up the structure here. You know, this game is broken up into five acts, I think it is. And there mm-hmm. are interstitials. Each of these heartbreak ones have you going through, like, it's, I don't know, Arcana subspace or whatever it is, on your way to the location where going after one of these you know, sets of evil ex-girlfriends, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This, it's also worth noting the structure of how the rhythm of how this flows. And what I mean by that is, these levels vary greatly in length.
Yes.
Some of them are full songs. Some of them are like 50 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, this Heartbreak one is very short, mm-hmm. Here. And that kind of stutter stop, different level of, length there is mm-hmm. really helpful to keeping the yes. pace fresh, I think. Yeah. After we do this, we go to the next level, Doki Doki Rush. I just now in 2023 looked up what Doki Doki means.
Heartbeat.
Specifically like a fast heartbeat, mm-hmm. Pitter patter. It is a fast heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Doki Doki Rush. We're riding down the city streets on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Here in something called Hate Hell Valley.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is just getting us used to being on the motorcycle, the way that that controls. Mm-hmm. And at the end of this, it sets up kind of who our arc villain for this is going to be. Mm-hmm. You end up running into three other masked women who are riding on their own bikes. They're all wearing devil masks, devil domino masks. They're kind of dressed up. It was like 50s tough girls.
Like greasers. Kind of things. Yeah. Yeah. Greasers. Like Grease.
Yeah.
You know, like the guys in Greece.
Yes. And these are the dancing devils, the kind of the arc villain here.
We're going to fight a series of these little gangs.
Here. Yes.
This leads us into the fight, Fighting Hearts, mm-hmm. Which starts out as a rhythm game dance fight. The way that this is the first new mechanic that's introduced, where it's shown as a side scrolling, a fight with them, where we mm-hmm. are timing button presses to dodge.
Yes.
There are things the way that, again, they do no tutorial for this. It's just obvious what you're meant to do.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
And really, really good signaling. God, contrast with Dredge, which also had a button timing minigame that dealt with concentric rings mm-hmm. going through. This is so much more intuitive than that was.
Yeah.
You know, it just works.
Yes.
There you go.
There's so much leeway on this. Like the game will pause. Or like mm-hmm. slow down if the heart converges and then you miss. So like, mm-hmm. Eventually it will become a fail, but you have so much time in order to let things proceed and get an okay rating for that beat.
Well, it starts, you also get less time as it goes.
Yes.
That's kind of what it's doing instead of a tutorial, mm-hmm. you know, giving you time to figure it out without text.
Yeah.
And this is the first kind of stage that has two different parts. After you do this fighting game, the stage isn't just that. They get on motorcycles and you get on motorcycles and chase them.
Yeah. And they're altering the landscape as they're going. Yes. And you're jumping over obstacles using that rhythm tapping interface to do it.
While still changing lanes to collect coins and avoid obstacles. Yeah. So it's introducing, you know, you're doing both of them. It's very classic game design shit, mm-hmm. you know, introducing one element at a time. At the end of this, you get to meet them at the end. It starts a new stage called Begin Again. Mm-hmm. This is a longer stage where we're fighting against the three dancing devils and we fight them in sequence.
Yeah. And this is to a vocal track. Each of these little acts climaxes in a vocal track, you know, these longer, big confrontations that we have. And we're going after them in sequence. So each of these follows a bit of a similar thing. We ride down streets and walkways going after them, dodging their fireballs, sometimes with rhythm taps, sometimes by maneuvering around them, which mm-hmm. is nice, adding in another little wrinkle there. There's not been much in the way of obstacles at this point.
Yeah.
And then once we kind of catch up to them, they start flying. And they split the street into a canyon, and then you go into kind of a space area.
Start flying.
Yes, then
we become flying. A space area. And again, this very romantic moment of us like not needing the motorcycle, jumping off it and just flying after them.
Yeah.
It's all style metaphor shit mm-hmm. here, but it works.
Yeah.
We destroy them. Mm-hmm. First gang down.
Yeah. You know,
it's River City Ransom.
barf.
The barf coins.
Barf does factor in later.
it really does. That's an incredible scene. That's like straight out of fucking The Evil Within 2. This leads us into Heartbreak 2, the beginning of our second act here. Mm-hmm. Another heart tunnel surfing section. This time we have a side-scrolling section mm-hmm. in this partway through. So it's changing with perspective. It's going to keep doing that. As well.
Yes. Yeah. And we get to the location for our next little bit here, Woe Woods. And we are riding through this forest. Things have kind of shifted to a blue and purple kind of color space. And mm-hmm. we are chasing after the stag, the emperor card.
Yeah. The only explicitly, I think by definition, masculine tarot card, like the sun is also masculine. The magician is masculine, but like the one that is explicitly, so it's a stag and we chase it and then we ride it.
Yes.
Afterwards.
Yeah. This is a little bit of a difficulty wake up call because those trees rush at you very fast.
Yes.
And finding your line through them can be a little bit tricky in a broadly very easy game that wants you to win it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Just like, you know, it goes up from a one to a two.
Yeah.
You know? This eventually leads you to four women in these wolf masks. These are the Howling Moons, the next gang we have to defeat.
Yeah. I like this next one, Forest Dub, where the music takes kind of a little bit more of an active kind of role in the presentation here. It's always been roughly matched, but the music here is this kind of wompy, sludgy, like dubstep bass.
Like a shuffle.
Yeah.
Like it's got a swing.
Yeah. And like when this hits, it distorts the view. You're in a wide open space, so you're not, it's not distorting like obstacles that you're trying to avoid, but it is, distorting the view, making it harder to find the path that you're going to, the line that you need to take to get these collectibles.
Yeah. Eventually, to these big wompy swinging things, you start bouncing on mushrooms, hopping there. You just have to dodge. You don't have to press a button to jump. You know, they hop you. It's like Mario Kart.
Yeah.
And then you get a super mushroom that makes you big so you can catch up. This is playing with the iconography of video games. It's going to do that more explicitly later.
Yes.
This allows you to catch up with the Howling Moons. At the end, they howl and they turn into a bunch of mechanical wolves.
Yes.
Here to fight. Again, doing that kind of magical girl, kind of Voltron.
Yes.
Thing almost. They're going to explicitly kind of Voltron later, but now they're individual wolves.
Yeah. Taking us into Laser Love, this next track, where the fool summons two laser machine guns for a bike. And now we're in a shooter. It's auto shooting. Like we just have to make sure that we are in front of a thing that is coming at us for enough time to destroy it. But it is a fun little wrinkle as we are gunning down just a whole pack of these mechanical wolves.
Yeah. Dodging a lot more stuff on screen.
Yes.
They start firing back. You got to dodge. You can't dodge sideways from their fireballs. You still have to make sure you're taking them out.
Yes.
That's how you're getting points for this. Really cool level. This leads us to the climax of Act Two, Dead of Night. And the beginning of this level is first person as you chase after the Howling Moons, using all of these little semiotic things of game design. You know, I love this, like little things, elements of a game.
Yeah.
You start out doing that. Then you get to activate your guns for this.
Yeah.
This is when the wolves merge into a big Cerberus, a big multi-headed mecha wolf thing that is going to fire missiles at you and fireballs and these little spike rollers that you have to dodge while auto firing at it.
And you know, taking out the three hats that are kind of going to be roughly in the three lanes that you're going to be dodging between. It's neat, and it's throwing a lot at you. It has escalated, you know, pretty quickly here by the end of the second chapter. And you are taking out the heads and then getting in underneath it three times to do like this charging uppercut to hit this gem like weak spot on the stomach until it blows up and another gang is down.
Yep. Take that, Howling Moons. This sends us into our third heartbreak that happened. This poor girl.
Yeah.
This is heartbreak three. We're riding up the spiral staircase, and we eventually get to this place where it's broken. So we need to time our jumps out of these spinning circular sections.
Yeah.
This is feels very new Mario to me.
Yeah.
These spinning, it's like a circle with a gap in it.
Yeah, it's like a big C. Yeah.
A big C that's spinning around, and you have to time your jumps so you jump out of the gap. And then there are big rolling discs that come down like Resident Evil 4 that you have to avoid as they come on the staircase until you get to the final portions, which is a top-down scrolling section where we do all kinds of shmups in this. First person, Space Harrier, overhead and side scrolling. This is a top-down one.
We're in Raiden zone. Heading into the next biome here, Twilight Cry City for the track Hearts and Swords. This is like a windmill city, is what this is. And it works in, I love this. If I hadn't played Bard's Tale, before this, I wouldn't have the vocabulary. We've got spinner tiles here.
We do have spinner tiles. we on these highways that end in T intersections, we had to hit these little cyclones that turn us right or left.
Yeah.
These are a little tricky to hit and you move fast. I had a weird unlock during this as well. About other games playing this is what I want F-Zero to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't like F-Zero.
Amazing
soundtrack. I think it's a pretty bad game.
Yeah.
It doesn't control very tight. I don't like the way the tracks are designed. I just don't like F-Zero very much.
No.
This level feels a lot like F-Zero to me, or what an idealized F-Zero.
Yes.
To me.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You're not going to find me defending F-Zero here. I wouldn't play F-Zero 99 with your hands. So
it would be a thing if we were still doing games at live shows.
Yeah.
It'd be a good live show episode, but then we would just do the panel and say we didn't like it and everyone would be mad at us.
Boo. So I came to this because I liked F-Zero. Yeah.
Fair enough. It'd be weird for us to just do the panel and be like, F-Zero, not super great. Mm-hmm. As a panel pitch is not that, thing. But what a weird Nintendo first party franchise.
Stop trying
to make it happen. And then they turn into like absolutely insanely hard mastery racers.
Yeah.
At no point was F-Zero like for me. Mm-hmm. You get through this part. Eventually you reach a woman and she throws you a sword. She has a cool domino mask. This is my favorite set of stage, this and the next one. This is incredible. We do this tap fight section and we hit her and she splits in half. She's the lovers, the lovers card, the stereo lovers. Mm-hmm. So she is a Gemini basically. Yeah. And we get this stage, the cool stage of the game, by far, called Parallel Universes, where they are on either side of, we're chasing them, they're flying on either side, and they're snapping in rhythm, shifting the world between two different states. This is not something new. This is something that happens in Mario, one of the Marios.
Yes.
I can't remember which, but it's an awesome trick, and I haven't seen it in a racing game.
No, this is a wonderful place to deploy it, and it is deployed so stylishly. Making it happen on the beat is very good as well. And then the way that it elaborates. So the way this works is like, it is, phasing you between these two different versions here. So, back and forth. But your position is, remains the same. So you have to keep both versions in your head so that, when you're going for what appears to be an open lane with a bunch of hearts in it, you need to be ready. Like, okay, there's an obstacle coming up in the middle lane here. So I need to dodge to get past it to get to this other one, right?
And you have to read ahead as well. Like, this underlines the way that distance is time, which is numbers, which is music, in a weird way. Like, you can look ahead to be like, okay, I'm about three, this far from this area. That means about this much time. That means about this many beats.
Yeah.
That means it'll be in this state by the time I get there.
Yes. Yeah. And then the way they complicate it by, when you get to the middle portion of this, there are three states that it goes through. There's one for when they're snapping their fingers on the sides, and then another one for when they kind of fly together in the middle of the screen to like clap their hand together, their hands together. And they're doing this. And it is just a wonderful like single stage introduction, execution, and then elaboration it just works kind of perfectly to a really good track too.
And ends to kind of like something that's a little bit like Smash Hit, where they're doing those rhythm snaps and you are dodging through these fan boxes and grids that have different states. Really, really good. Great level.
Well, it's you doing your own is what it is. These are rhythm taps for the fool to snap her fingers to make obstacles go away, get past them.
Where you
she's taking control of it.
Yeah. She's gaining the power the same way she gained the power to fly.
Yes.
We get to the next level for this. This is just the final bit of this. Mine. This is a heart chasing and doing rhythm taps. On a motorcycle sword fight against the two lovers. Yeah. There's nothing too special here. We just have to defeat them. They had their highlight level before.
Yes. Cool. Cool choreography, cool sword fight and stuff. But I don't know. Put anything after Parallel Universes, you're going to have trouble.
Yes. Next up, we have another Heartbreak, of course, Heartbreak 4, another heart tunnel level. Halfway through, though, the Hermit card activates and the edges of the screen get warped to the other side.
Yeah.
So you can bleed over.
Yeah. You get Pac-Man tunnels on either side.
Yeah. Yep. Again, just using the language of video games in this happens so often. It's really interesting. Yeah. Even the weak spot on the bottom of the wolf thing, like, it's a video game ass thing in a game that is not very video game ass.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And this, the highway takes us to the Desert of Doubts, where we are in another vehicle and with a completely different control scheme, kind kind of a different handling anyway. We're in a convertible. So this goes from, the motorcycle game to Outrun, right?
Yes.
We're steering very loosely, and slowly. This thing is like a boat, mm-hmm. until we, we get a boat in the next chapter, but, yes. We're going down the highway, trying to, get ourselves in position to get these lines. And then things change when we run into the villain here, Hermit 64, who is this woman, sitting in an armchair with a VR helmet on.
A VR helmet that takes Game Boy carts.
Yes.
Which is great. Give me that.
Yeah.
So we go to the next level, Reverie, where she turns you into a Game Boy cart, inserts mm-hmm. it into her VR, and this, we have this slower music and music pace, where we are flying down this first person Virtual Boy corridor.
Yeah. Remember Red Alarm? Because here we're playing Red Alarm.
Yeah, you don't remember Red Alarm, but imagine you did.
But we are avoiding these blocks and aiming for the hearts in between them. And the way that it elaborates is eventually the blocks start turning on and off and switching positions. So you have to aim for a place where the block is, it seems like you're going to run into it just to be rescued when it changes at the, on the beat.
This is what I was actually thinking of at the end of Parallel Universes. One thing about this game that is true is that, as much as I like this game and the stages are really cool, I played through this game twice. Mm-hmm. It does run together. It's a record of electronic music with similar aesthetics. There mm-hmm. are obviously noteworthy differences, but some of it does run together for me.
Yeah.
This is why I was thinking of happened here. That happens later. Mm-hmm. This ends with The World We Knew, which is a bullet hell level that takes place in Hermit 64's visor.
Yeah. It's Geometry Wars. I love this. You start out like you're avoiding hazards, going around on the surface of this, visor. You're trying to collect hearts, and then eventually you get the ability to send out these bursts of fire on either side, but to the rhythm, mm-hmm. right? So you need to make sure that you are in position to take out the threats or the obstacles on the beat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then you're moving through this moving maze of hazards, just an overhead maze, a bullet helly kind of thing. Finally, you face off against a big heart that fires these barrages of homing missiles. Mm-hmm. Here's a little thing where I feel like this is not cheap, but a little bit maybe cheeky, I guess. Mm-hmm. The way these homing missiles come in, it's a little unclear where their hurt box is going to be.
Yeah.
The way that they signal that to you is just by putting hearts in the safe space to go.
Yes.
It's not so much you are actively avoiding the hazard. You're just going where the hearts are and you happen to avoid the hazard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, that feels a little bad, I guess.
Yeah.
It's fine in a Gestalt. It doesn't really matter. It's just something I noticed when I was playing. And I'm like, I don't have a clear idea of what hazard I'm avoiding. I'm just getting hearts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had to just actively switch the way that I looked at this. Because if I focused on trying to avoid where those were going to converge, I almost always got hit.
They're harder to avoid. So that's not great. But again, it's absolutely minor nitpick. This defeats Hermit 64. And we go into our final Heartbreak 5.
Yeah. Here. And we're sailing along this ocean. Like, we have gotten through the highways, now we're out to sea. We're on this boat trying to get these circles of hearts that are winding around these whirlpools while avoiding falling into the whirlpools themselves. It's a nice calm level ahead of some mm-hmm. very intense stuff that we're going to get to. Mm-hmm. But eventually we go over the waterfall and we are controlling our own descent down this heart tunnel as we navigate through these gates, doing a, I don't even know the name. I don't even know what game this is quoting from, actually.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure either. It seems like, again, part of the semiotics of games.
Yeah.
This introduces us in the level Transonic Gravity, which introduced us to the city, Love Dead City, which mm-hmm. is rainy and gothic, and we get our villain here who has a skull mask who's called Little Death, which means come.
It is sex. It is orgasm, the ultimate specifically.
Villain Le
Petit Mort. Yes. Yeah. This is a blonde woman with a skull mask who is also young.
Makes me think of how French people are fucking.
what kind of science they on?
They're looking for new sensations. They're getting they're dying. They're flatlining. They like to get an F line sesh when they get in a orgasm sesh, a JO sesh. I had to combine my JO and my flatline seshes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've had some powerful orgasms in my time. Mm-hmm. It does not feel like a little death.
Yeah, I don't know. Seems weird.
fucking French. Yes. So this is Little Death with a skull mask. And we chase after her with the new mechanic being these little wells that flip gravity. Yeah. So we ride between these two parallel roads with gravity flips.
Mario Kart shit. The stage also has several mechanics from previous levels, too. We get those Turner, tiles, we get gun sections, everything is kind of, coming together. The fact that Little Death is so young also makes me think that we've been going back in time to a degree. And this is, you know, to my mind, this is like a foundational heartbreak that we're getting to, right?
It's hard to tell whether they happen in sequence, numeric sequence or not. Difficult, but she does look small. Could also just be a la petite person, aka French for the small death. The small person. This takes us into Hate Skulls, which is her last like big gameplay twist in this, which is really interesting. Little Death summons a bunch of little flying skulls, and the card we have, Temperance, turns into a bow and arrow. We are now auto running, you know, like literally we don't have to control where we're at. We use the cursor to control our aiming reticule.
Yes.
And to shoot the skulls and get combos.
We're doing what this is. We are highlighting the enemies that we want to hit. And then the barrages of lasers that we are shooting are coming out on the beat.
Yep. Pretty fun. It tells you how good of a combo you get here. Again, I think caring about score in this game is kind of missing the point. But I like that it gives you a little arcade feedback.
Yes.
We get the penultimate level here inside. It's very fast. And this is our fight against Little Death.
Yeah. This is where things kind of get a little bit Tempest-y or Sonic 2-y. We are riding around the inside of this round tunnel. So we're not just dodging left and right on a plane, but working radially, right? And halfway through, we knock her off of her bike and she breaks her neck, which is pretty grisly. But instead of dying, instead she vomits and spews out a green pillar with such velocity that she continues rushing out ahead of us. But now instead of riding around on the inside of the tunnel, our motorcycle is getting traction on and we are riding around the outside of this column of bright green puke.
It looks like it's coming out of puke, but it's so abstract that there's nothing gross about it. It looks a little bit like Portal Moon liquid to me. You know, same kind of consistency and such.
It is coming out of a mouth.
It is coming out of a mouth. I'm not saying it's not puke. It just doesn't, it's not gross. Like this engine is incapable of making something gross.
Yeah.
Or this graphics style, rather, not engine.
Yeah.
She turns into a large monster version of herself. And we have to aim at the bow at the weak points while avoiding obstacles as we fight her. This leads us into the final level, Wild Hearts Never Die. The five arcana that we fought against form a pentagram around an evil eye, and we're chasing through hyperspace, and we get one of my favorite final exam remix boss rush levels. This is so cute. You know, and it's a nice escalation, but it's very sweet.
This level is kind of like bifurcated. The first half is the boss fight against the is like the mechanical grand tour or whatever, fighting against this evil eye itself as it's going around. You know, we are avoiding all of its obstacles. It's throwing everything at us, right?
Yes.
It turns into the spinning top that we have to avoid. We get to outright bullet hell with it too. And then you catch up to it, and then you use your sword to crack it like an egg. Again, working that trans allegory in there. And then the fool emerges from our character, this polygonal lady, who has been kind of separate from the girl that we've seen at the start, you know, empowering us, emerges and then it turns into one of the dancing devils and starts chasing after our character, you know, now in her, you know, regular human form, as she is kind of skateboarding. And now we get the story catharsis, and I am in full on like goosebumps, like feeling every feel this is giving me kind of mode.
It's real good. We're redoing all the battles, but instead of destroying them, we give them a little kiss on the cheek.
Just a smooch, just with smooch.wave play.
All of these, you know, these heartbreaks, we're saying bye.
Yeah.
You know, is how I interpret this.
You know, my resentment and my clinging to this has been holding me back. Part of me shedding the shell is to, you know, recognize the place that you had in my life and not struggle, not fight, but just to send you away. So good.
I say goodbye to you. I release you. You know, all without words. you know, basically, really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, and this happens, we do the same to all of them, doing a little remix of the final boss fights, like a little micro mechanic of the boss fights, and then, but ending with a little kiss.
Yeah.
Little kiss on the cheek. Yeah. Once you kiss everybody on the cheek, the fool turns into this dragon and we ride her through this gigantic space tunnel. Mm-hmm. And the narrator talks about our victory. From the shards of your broken heart, a real heroine has arisen. You know, mm-hmm. we fixed the world of Arcana. We now need to go and find our own harmony. You know, the idea is, again, you've weathered this heartbreak.
Yes.
You know, and you are now stronger mm-hmm. For it.
Yeah. And you don't necessarily need this cosmic force or whatever. You know, this struggle and this processing has changed you for the better. Right. Yeah. So you've gotten your own level up from this.
There's no cosmic force. You know, it's all metaphors.
Well, yeah. Well,
now that the process of healing and kind of pushing through this stuff has happened.
I'm saying it for you just from the fiction as presented.
Yeah.
No. But you know, she like kissed the dragon and it turns back into a butterfly. And we just kind of skateboard after it for this little victory lap kind of thing, going through mm-hmm. the last part of the level, and then you catch it and then it turns into your new heart. You know, you're just the shards have gone everywhere, but you have assembled something new and stronger out of it.
And the narration says it outright. You know, the narration reprises at the beginning, talks about the person in the town very much like your own. Talks about this lady, says, you know, she fell in love, fell asleep, fell away, and fell for years into sadness and nothingness until she fell right back into her groove.
Yeah.
And the character falls back into her skylight, and now she has long hair, she's playing guitar, and she is writing the end credit song.
Yes.
You know, the self-actualization has happened.
She's come out of her shell. It's beautiful, and I'm sitting there just fucking wrecked by it. It's great.
Yeah. It's very, very sweet. You know, I don't necessarily see this as much of a shell thing for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to invalidate any kind of translation to this.
No.
I'm using mm-hmm. shell, lowercase shell for this.
I'm using both.
As a processing thing.
Yeah.
The semiotics are a little bit weird as a trans read because she starts out mm-hmm. more butch and then ends more femme. Mm-hmm. You know, as a thing, and it'd be interesting if it were. It's not portrayed as a male presenting person early on, you mm-hmm. know. So it's just interesting what they're doing. I don't know. It feels open to interpretation to me. I don't know what it's doing.
It feels like it can hit a bunch of different things. Yes.
Yeah, which is a strength. Yeah, I'm not complaining about that. It's not a lack of focus. It's a versatility. In this case, mm-hmm. You know, and I take this as a just, you know, becoming stronger after having had these experiences.
Yes.
You know, a game about processing, mm-hmm. you know, in a metaphorical and kind of joyous way, like looking back, like it's very hard, mm-hmm. you know, to do it. You are in danger. Mm-hmm. These things, you may resent these things that are presented as very scary, you know, evil ex-girlfriends or what have you. They made you what you are.
They made you what you are. It is a process of transformation, but not becoming something else, becoming more you. And that's cool.
Yeah. In favor of that.
Yeah.
You know, very, very cute. Very good. Would be worse if it were longer. Mm-hmm. Would be worse with more mechanics. Again, though, it is a thing where for me, you know, I did love this. The thing that unlocked it, though, was reading about the making of it and them saying they were making a pop album. Mm-hmm. Thinking of this as an album makes it feel like a new thing to me, like Atari 50, which is half game, half documentary. That would be a really interesting thing to cover at some point. It would.
So much of that has already been covered in our Atari special episode.
It'd be in that, and we'd be just repeating things from a documentary.
Right.
It's just so cool.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is a short episode. Throwing in a tight five there. Mm-hmm. Pick up Atari 50.
Yeah.
If you care at all about video game history, it is the ideal way to learn that shit.
Yes.
I think it is a collection of documentary clips, text, archival documents.
High resolution scans of like even
scans,
promotional stuff and box art. If you're a fan of those.
Interspersed with games. Mm-hmm. So you learn about the history of the company and then you play the game that they made. And a lot of Atari games are very simple. You know, they're not the most fun thing in the world. A lot of them do stand up. A lot of them don't. You know, that's mm-hmm. fine. But getting that added context, that makes that feel like a new type of documentary, the same way this is a new type of pop album.
Yeah.
I would love to see this run with.
Yeah.
As an idea.
More people do something with this. Take this as an inspiration. I want to see the game that cites this.
Yes. And not just another rhythm game, you know, not mm-hmm. This with different music. The idea of integrating, you know, writing an album and mm-hmm. then making a game that works with it simultaneously.
Yeah.
You know, not just a game inspired by it, you know, not just not a multimedia, not Southland Tales, mm-hmm. you know, something where it is all one product.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to listen to this without playing the game. But mm-hmm. I also don't want to play the game without listening to this. Like it is yeah. a real triumph of holistic design.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Really happy to have played it. Finally got off my ass. This has been talked up a lot. I was happy to see that it kind of lived up to my expectation of it. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. This, you know, like so many ideas, but still very economical, does not feel unfocused, does what it needs to do, and then, you know, moves on from it and, you know, wraps up in a very satisfying way. Successful, very successful product.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a very clinical way of describing something very emotionally affecting.
It's the highest praise you can give something.
Yes. Yes.
Success as a product. It's similar to the creamer I used in my coffee in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to say. Goals.
Yeah. Yes.
Journeyman like work from a steady, steady source of art value. Yeah. Really, really like it. Mm-hmm. Thanks everyone for listening. We appreciate you. I threatened you with the hour long WAF. It happened. Mm-hmm. It may happen again in the future.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing really, really long episodes on things. We got to have real short episodes too. It is yep. all part of the remit. Please don't be too disappointed. If you are disappointed, you know, feel how you want to feel, but please understand, I suppose. That's what I
yeah,
mean.
Yeah.
If you are non-demographically identical to us and you have a product or a project or product you'd like to have a shout out, please send me a message at gary@duckfeed.tv. Include your pronouns, pronunciation, anything pertinent like that. This episode, I want to call attention to a charity stream that's going on. Ooh. And we got this just under the wire. This is happening November 11th.
November 11th. Okay.
Yes. So as you're listening to this, November the 11th, 8 a.m., Zoe and company are doing a fundraiser. This is to support the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund.
Okay.
Streaming games for the whole day. 24 hours. Spooky, just sleep-deprived stuff, similar to you know, DuckStream in that way. Mm-hmm. Gives to a very worthy cause. So please come out and give support to what's going on. You know?
Yeah.
What's going on right now in terms of Gaza and Israel and Palestine is something I'm not going to pretend to know a lot about. Mm-hmm. I care about people, and I certainly yeah. care about children, kind of regardless
yep.
of you know, their nationality or where they were born.
Yeah, you know,
a children's relief fund for people mm-hmm. who are being bombed, regardless of the bombing mm-hmm. stuff, seems very good to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's being horrified by it, I think, is a reasonable reaction.
That's the only reaction I have, being horrified yeah. and shutting up, you know, yeah. but Zoe's doing one better.
Yes.
You know, it's something where I am ignorant about it, so I mm-hmm. don't talk about it very much, but Zoe's putting her money where her mouth is
yeah.
and doing this charity stream.
Where can people find, is there a Twitch name where that is going?
There is a link here, donate.bd, the number 4, pp.com. So that's donate.bd4pp.com.
Okay.
Is the website to get for more information. That's starting at 8 a.m. on November 11th. And please give if you're able to. I don't know about you. I have been fucking sickened by everything.
Yeah.
You know, it hasn't been good.
No, it's been really deleterious to my mental health.
Yeah, I fucking hate it.
Yeah, yeah. It's, yeah.
That's not the primary concern. It's obviously not the primary, but it is true. Like, I'm, you know, just because I'm not talking about it doesn't mean I don't have feelings about it. I just, mm-hmm. it's fucking complicated and I don't know anything. It fucking sucks, but I'll give money mm-hmm. because it's, you know, I don't know. I've seen those pictures.
Yeah.
So go support Zoe's stream, please.
Please.
Yeah.
If you have thoughts about Sayonara Wild Hearts or Grand Theft Auto 5 or The Order 1886, God, mm-hmm. really shouldn't have repeated those 86. Numbers in there, buds. 1886, there we go.
I don't mind 86. I think it sounds catchy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 1886, yeah. I just get it yeah. mixed up. Probably some form of dyscalculia there or something, I don't know. If you have thoughts about any of those, the deadline for responses is November the 15th. Mm-hmm. Write in, go to duckfeed.tv/contact and click the button for WAF, write in there. The deadline for December's games, which are Mass Effect and Slayers X Terminal Aftermath, Vengeance of the Slayers.
Yes.
That deadline is December the 15th. Same Pull place
where you think they'll be there.
Yes. So. Same place. Keep your responses brief and specific. And if you have thoughts about multiple games, please write in multiple responses.
Yeah. Announcements about Realich Hours coming soon. We have the art. Music is in the works. I'm working on the outline for the first couple episodes right now. Mm-hmm. We're going to get a couple of those banked up before we start releasing them. Before the end of the year is our goal, which we will make. Mm-hmm. Mark your calendars. Duckstream.
Yes.
Coming up. First weekend in December.
Yeah.
Is when that is.
Yeah. So starting on
the first.
December the 1st we'll talk about starting times and stuff there, but
there's no real reason to change it. Like I feel like 6 p.m. We'll do it.
Yeah.
Starting there for the overnight shift in Portland. The only thing I really know that's going to happen, I think we are not doing Duck Throat Kitchen this year.
Okay.
Largely just because it was hard to do. And that joke may have. May have been spent. I think that if we just do something over and over and over again, not necessarily interested in that. Modridge is going to play, speaking of doing something over and over again. And then I think we want to try to incorporate some tabletop stuff goal this year. So it's in the early stages of planning. But me and Will and the gang, we might play some Arkham Horror, the card game that we both really like. And then if we get that set up for tabletop, I might also run an RPG.
Oh, nice.
During that. And we'll still have the old favorites, like multiplayer stuff and Nick's karaoke block, which is always a highlight of the year. Various things. We talked about playing Super Mario Wonder because that game is.
Oh, yeah. It's really, really, really good.
Joyous goddamn delight. We just got to that. Me and Liv, I was watching, and we just got to the stage where the character turns into a platform.
It's so good.
For the level. And Liv was inconsolable. inconsolable, like almost crying, laughing, could not look at it. It was absolutely a joyous moment. This is such a stacked fucking year for games.
Yeah.
If this wasn't Baldur's Gate 3 year, this would probably be my favorite thing that came out this year.
Oh, yeah.
It's really fucking good.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff. You got anything special planned?
We're probably going to be doing really similar stuff. We'll probably have some multiplayer things with the level or other folks that I can wrangle together, mixed in with survival horror or horror something, and Jackbox stuff. So more details to come. But as always, one thing that will not change, we're raising money for Transactive, an organization that helps trans youth, their families, and their communities run out of the Lewis and Clark College. Same great cause, still believe in it now as much as we did back in 2014 or 13 when we started.
Yeah.
Like one of these years. Yeah. A long time ago.
Coming up on the 10 year anniversary.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. Nothing's changing with that. Still doing that. And we'd love it if you tuned in and gave. It's a really good cause and it's a consistent highlight of the year.
Yeah.
Really, really fun. Love everybody who comes out and chats and makes the time go by.
Yeah,
and makes it very, very fun as opposed to a grueling chore, which ordinarily, every year I get older, staying up all night.
Oh yeah,
sounds harder.
Is harder. Yeah.
Yes.
Starting evening of December 1st, going through the evening of December the 3rd, come check out at the Duck Feed Twitch channel. There'll be a landing page ready for this as well. With all of the donation information and such.
Yep. We appreciate that. That's about it. Other than please join us in thanking Gwen, our producer.
Thank you, Gwen.
We appreciate Gwen. And I think that's it. What should they watch out for until next time?
Watch out for regrets.
Yeah. Watch out for heartbreak.